Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the podcast for October 1st, 2007, and on this episode, we have a wonderful interview with director Bill Polinsky. This interview has been a long time in the making, and Tom is very excited to bring this Chicago legend to you, so you definitely don't want to miss it. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready, Chicago, and let's talk theater.
This is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our special guest this week is a legend in Chicago theater, a man who is an innovator, who is a terrific director and producer, and the man that kind of put musical theater on the map in Chicago. He has only 18 Jeff Awards for directing and producing. Say hello, Bill Polinsky.
Hi there, Tom. Glad to be here.
I am just so glad to have you here because you are a legend. I grew up watching your shows, and
that's so glad to hear. I mean, so happy that you say that. And people have come to me occasionally and say things like that. I just feel so good because when you're doing the shows, you're so involved in the work of doing the show that you're not really thinking about the effect that it'll have on people. And one of the things that, of course, we had the Candlelight for all those years.
That's true.
And one of the things that happened with Candlelight is people would come to me and say, I've never seen a live stage show before, somebody in the audience. And then I would see these people a year later and they'd say, we've seen several shows here. And a year after that, I'd see them and they'd say, we've been to New York and we've seen Broadway shows.
So you've actually created people, making them theater fans.
That's what we felt very good about, is that we thought we introduced so many new people to theater. Yeah.
Well, now here we're out in Munster, Indiana, which, folks, is not that far.
No, it isn't.
From the city, it's about, in heavy traffic, it might be a 40-minute ride.
And I know when I see Sox Park, I know I'm 30 minutes to Munster.
That's right.
I pass by there.
And we're inside the theater in the Thrust stage. How many does it seat here?
About 415.
Okay, 415 with a nice big Thrust stage. And you have been artistic director here now for how long?
This is about 2.5 years.
All right, 2.5 years. And we're here for Hello, Dolly, the opening, which I can't wait.
We're doing quite a few. Well, we're doing mostly musicals at this point. Once in a while we'll do a play, but this season it's all musicals. Next season it's all musicals. And we're doing many revivals of classics like Hello, Dolly. Although we are going to be moving in the direction of adding some new material, we're doing a world premiere next season. We'll talk about that.
Okay. I'll make sure because I know a little about
it's
that.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
And but Hello, Dolly is one that hasn't been done recently, hasn't been revived in Chicago. And I was surprised when I planned it that it hadn't been done in quite a few years.
The last time I saw it, Aline Robertson did it at Marriott. And I think that was in the early 90s somewhere.
Yeah, so it's been a while. And you forget how good the show is until you go back and really study it over. And when I did it at Candlelight years ago, I did it in 78 at Candlelight, and Paula Scrofano played Minnie Faye in that. And she was just recently out of Northwestern University. And I decided to go back to the matchmaker, the source material for Hello, Dolly, and really liked the play so much that I sort of made it an ensemble approach rather than a star vehicle for Carol Channing, which it turned out to be, you know, later. So we've done that again here. Even though Dolly, of course, is the star, it feels like the whole company is involved in this show rather than it being just a one-person show.
Yet Paula Scrofano is so great. She is our leading lady in Chicago.
Yeah, she is great, and I've done so many shows with her, and the thing that I love directing her, of course, not only is she very smart and has great instincts for what to do, but there was a time when almost I couldn't think of things to tell her that she wouldn't anticipate and do before I told her. I mean, we were so in sync for a while there because we did about 20 shows together.
That's a director's dream, isn't it?
Yeah, perfect, you know.
and they all worked.
They're all worked, yeah. And she's very strong, very dependable always, you know. and John Rieger, her husband, was playing Van de Gelder in this production. They both came out of Northwestern at the same time, and I think they worked for me right after they graduated in Funny Thing Happened in the Way of the Forum. They played the young couple in that. And with all our character men in town, we had all kinds of funny character
men. Well, we're going to have them on coming up soon, and I believe they've done at least 2 dozen shows together. Which is a treat.
Oh, yeah, sure. I know, and of course they've done I Do, which is a natural, but
yes.
They've done all kinds. And John was saying even a show that the director didn't know that they were married at the time and cast John as her father, which he teased him about, you know. So that was...
I'll have to ask him about it. Yeah. So what can we expect with Dolly, your approach to that? I mean, you're not reinventing it?
No, we're not reinventing it. We're doing it pretty much the way I did it back then. Very realistic in its own way, even though you speak to the audience. The play is written that way too, where the characters talk to the audience and tell them their inner thoughts, and that's carried over in the musical by the original writers. But it's still very realistic. It's got a good script by Michael Stewart. It's funny. And, of course, the songs, people forget how good all the songs are.
Jerry Herman was a master. Yeah. Is a master, yes.
I saw Jerry Herman when he was starting out in a show called Parade. It was a little review. It was in the Village in New York, and he was playing the piano, and that was the only instrument. In the cast were Charles Nelson Reilly, Dodie Goodman, and a few other people. And, of course, nobody knew who Charles Nelson Reilly was at that time.
Right.
And Jerry was looked like a young little skinny guy from just out of school, and he played the show, and he had written, that was the first thing he wrote in New York, was a review. Well, then his big break was when he wrote Shalom, what is it, Milk and Honey.
Milk and Honey,
right.
That was
his first Broadway show.
That's right.
And, of course, David Merrick produced Hello, Dolly, a fabulous producer, and it was done well with Gower Champion. It was done first class, and he did a great job. And then one of those songs from Parade was retitled and rewritten new lyrics, but he kept the music and became the opening number for Mame years later.
Okay.
It was interesting, you know.
Yeah.
But, so I've followed his career for a long time. Then when we did Mac and Mabel, one of the shows that I liked on Broadway that he wrote that didn't make it.
And he told me in an interview I did with him, he just was dumbfounded because it's a great show. It had the same team that Dolly had.
Yeah.
And
the score is wonderful.
Yes, it is.
It had two wonderful performances, Robert Preston and Bernadette Peters. So I thought for sure it would be a big hit, but it wasn't. And later we did it at Candlelight, and out of the blue, all of a sudden one day I get a call from Jerry Herman, and he said, I hear you're doing Mac and Mabel. Is there anything I can help you with?
Wow.
I mean, that's the kind of guy he was. And I said, I'm having some trouble with the tempo of the particular number, and he sang it to me over the phone. So that was my story with Jerry Herman.
Wow, that's terrific. And who else is in the production of Dolly here?
Oh, gosh. It's a large cast. Corey Goodrich plays Mrs.
Malloy. Corey's terrific, yes.
Yeah, and a new girl for me, but she's been doing some things in town. I think she's very talented. She's going to do a lot. Is Dara Cameron, who's doing Minnie Faye this time.
And Ed Cross.
Ed Cross is doing Cornelius, and Zach Zuby is doing Barnaby.
Well, he's terrific, too. Yeah.
You got
some top players.
We got some really good people in it. And Carolyn Kent is very funny as Ernestina Money, which is a smaller part that she makes into a great part. And who else? Those are the major roles, along with Ambrose, played by John Cunningham, and Audrey Billings.
Oh, John Cunningham. I like him. He's coming on, yes.
Yeah, he's now going to be in Little Women after this. So he's got a nice career going.
Good for him. Mm-hmm. So we're going to see a traditional kind of by the book Hello, Dolly, that everyone loves.
Yeah, pretty much, except Jack McGaw did the set a little different. It's not your bandbox 1890s yellows and blues and greens. It's kind of a retrospective. It looks like an old painting of the period.
I'm looking at it now because we're doing this interview in the theater in Munster. Yeah, it looks like it's got a lot of room for a lot of movement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does. And this is a big stage for a 415-seat theater.
Yes, it is.
It's a tricky stage to work on because it has a wide thrust, which means the audience goes around on three sides, but they'll go also behind the actor somewhat. So instead of a 180-degree semicircle, it goes about 240 degrees around here. So you have to stage almost like in the round.
Yeah, I can see that looking at it. Yes.
Yeah. So you're doing sort of a...
well, you've got a little experience in that.
Yeah, it would be easier in the round than this because you're doing a combination here of in the round and proscenium that's really a tricky combination. So it takes a little while to figure out how to stage things here. And, of course, every show, no matter where you do it, you learn something new and different about the theater and you know.
Well, Dolly is an underrated dance show. Who's your choreographer for this?
Oh, yeah. Well, Stacey Flaster is my...
And she's up for two Jeff Awards.
Yeah, and she...
I'm cheering for her.
She did a great job with Cats recently.
Unbelievable, yes.
Yeah, and this she did a really good job as well. And she's just very good choreographer. She knows what she wants and how to translate it to the dancers.
Yeah.
I think she's going to have a big career.
So now tell us the days you're planning. I know you do some daytime shows during the week here
in
Munster.
Oh, we got good ones for you. Okay. Well, we do Wednesday matinees and Thursday matinees.
At 2 o'clock.
At 2 o'clock.
Okay.
And then we do Friday and Saturday at 8.
At 8, okay.
And Sunday at 2:30. And most of our shows are, the sixth show of the week varies a little bit, but most of the time there's a Saturday matinee as well at 2:30. But sometimes instead of the Saturday matinee, we'll have a special show, you know, maybe a Thursday night or...
Yeah, they can go to the Theater at the Center website.
Yeah,
and our
right.
Talk Theater website has the listings for the
right,
show,
that'll
too.
Give them the exact details of the sixth
and,
show.
And it opens today on September 20th, right. And we run through when?
6 weeks.
6 weeks.
I think we close March 9th. No.
No, that would be November 9th.
I'm thinking of a different
Probably
show.
November 9th.
I'm
but
sorry.
Just to be sure, check on the website
okay.
Because we will have all...
Yeah, check it out because I'll tell you why. I'm working on three shows at once right now and I got my dates twisted around.
Well, you're a busy man and you're used to it, though. How do you mentally keep...
It's really hard to work on a whole bunch of them at the same time. You're just right now, before you came,
okay.
I was downstairs working on Scrooge, which is the next one here.
Okay.
And that's the one that probably goes till March 9th that I mixed up. That opens in January and goes January 23 to March 9th.
Okay.
And
yeah, then, tell us your next season for Theater at the Center, the shows you're doing for next year.
Okay. Oh, I got that wrong, too. Oh, boy. Okay. Our next season, we start with La Cage aux Folles.
Okay.
And
that'll be like in January.
That's the okay. January.
Okay,
I'm
that's
sorry.
In January.
The Scrooge is the Christmas show.
Right.
Yeah. It's just too many for me right now. But anyway, right after La Cage, our second show is a world premiere that we mentioned
right.
before.
Right. The Rockne from Notre Dame.
Notre Dame, yeah. And that's one that we've been working on for quite a while. Buddy Farmer wrote the original book and miniseries. And is adapting it, the book, to the musical stage. And we have David Bell working on it.
He's wow, that's top drawer.
With Michael Mahler, new up-and-coming composer.
Yeah, we know Michael. We've interviewed him, and he's a terrific performer,
terrific.
Too. Yeah.
And that's going to be April 3rd and run 6 to 8 weeks, depending. It runs 6 weeks, but then it can be extended a couple of weeks if we have to extend it. And then Phantom is the summer show in July and August. And that's the Coppet Yeston show.
That's the one. And we just interviewed Maury with it, and it opened in the city. And
yeah.
I assume you're going to come out and see it because I'm sure it'll be a different approach.
Yeah,
but,
I'd like to see it. Yeah. And, you know,
tell us about your background because you are the guy, Maury Yeston told me, Bill Polinsky and the old Candlelight is what made my show go. You had the longest run of it, and the critics from the Variety and the Wall Street Journal came and reviewed it, and everyone wanted it then.
That's so. True. You know, it was interesting. I belong to the National Alliance of Musical Theaters. That's a national group. And at that time, the theater out in Houston, Theater Under the Stars, had found that Yeston and Coppet had written this piece some years ago, and then it got tabled when Lloyd Webber's opened because
right.
they thought, well, you know, now that his is a big success, we'll wait with this. And so they did it at Theater Under the Stars, and we all went out there to see it, and it was very good. It needed a few little things, in my opinion, to my taste. I thought, well, if I could do it, I'd cut one number that I didn't like, and I'd get rid of some other things. There's some set movers they call the accolades, you
mm-hmm.
know, and I didn't want them in our production if I did it, etc. Well, I thought this was probably going to be hard for me to get the rights to because many of the organizations in the National Alliance are 3,000 and 4,000 seat theaters around the country. And what happened was at that time, most of the theaters were a little shy because they thought the audiences might think it was Lloyd Webber's show and there'd be confusion, and so they shied away from it, and I was therefore able to get the rights to do the show.
Didn't you just kind of ask Maury?
Yeah, well, they asked Maury, the agents who handle all this stuff, asked Maury, who is this company in Chicago, you know, Polinsky, and I was... happily, I had done Nine, Maury Yeston's first big hit, and he came out to see it and loved it. So when he heard I was interested, he said, let Bill do it. And he didn't even check to see what I was going to do with it. He let me change what I wanted. So I cut the one number I didn't think worked, and I cut a few things and redid some things. And then on opening night, he came out with Arthur Coppett. And luckily, they loved the show. And said, fine, that's the way we're going to keep it, you know. And so we ran it over a year at Candlelight.
Yeah, it was supposed to run 13 weeks, and it ran over a year.
Yeah, over a year, during which time all these guys from the National Alliance came to see it, and then they all scheduled it. And so it was done all over the country.
And didn't you direct it in New York somewhere?
I did it, yes.
Long Island?
I did it in
At the West, Westminster, or
what is the
Westchester.
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 Yes, in Elmsford,
right.
New York, which is only about 45 minutes from Broadway, actually. But yeah, I did it there about a year and a half later. Somebody, the director, the producer there had seen it at Candlelight and asked me if I'd come and do it there. And he had a theater with a big thrust stage and about 500 seats. And it did a pretty good run there, too. It got nice reviews. We didn't really use any of the Chicago cast because he's so close to New York, he casts all the New York people. But we had... Our leading man was Bob Cuccioli, who later went on to do Jekyll and Hyde.
He's a big-time guy. Wow.
He was very good in it. But as soon as I left, it was in previews, and everything was fine, and I left town, came back to Chicago, and I just got off the plane. I get a call. Bob broke his foot coming down a rope. Can you come up with another actor and get back here right away? So I luckily was able to get Chris Garbrecht, who was a substitute for our Phantom, Scott Schaefer, who took a vacation during the year. And Chris was available, and he and I flew back the next day, and we put him in the show, and he did it for several weeks. Bob came back with a shoe on his, kind of a boot on his shoe, and did the show, and they held the reviews until Bob came back, and then the reviewers were called in,
That's a great story. I didn't know that. That's one more he missed. He had plenty of stories.
Well, he wasn't in on that one, I don't think.
Yeah, he probably didn't. I had read that he was hurt. I didn't know, though, that the show, you kept the show going by bringing someone else in.
Yeah, and it was. And when I first got off the plane and went in there, there was a performance that night, and I didn't know what they were going to do exactly. And what they did was interesting. They had an understudy, but he hadn't rehearsed yet. So he was mouthing everything with the mask on. You couldn't tell. And Bob Guccioli was singing it all on a mic. And that's
off stage,
that night. Yeah, off stage. They got through.
Boy, that's
that
rough.
Night.
You can't get away with that too often, huh?
And then we put in Chris. And actually, it was good that Chris went in because he knew the score really well. And they were having a little problem with the father and son duet at the end of the show. And as soon as he got in, that worked like a charm because he knew how that was supposed to be done. And when Bob came back, it was all together, you know, so it was good.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
So
that's our third summer show. We're doing the producers, the Mel Brooks show in the fall.
Boy, not too much pressure after the great show that Marriott's put together. Have you seen that
I
yet?
Haven't seen it yet.
Oh, you'll enjoy it.
I'm sure it's good. Mm-hmm. But we're going to give them Zero Mostel, though.
Okay.
No, it's tough, but you have to find I'm going to look for an actor for that part, which is going to be hard to find, who's a complete nut, because I want a real eccentric in that part of the producer, you know.
Well, wait till you see Robbie Lehman.
Oh, he's good. Yeah, Rob is good, yeah. And they have good people up there.
Well, that kind of begs a question, and I know you've, because of the acting pool, but your demographic here at Munster is far enough away from the city, and certainly far enough away from places like Marriott or Drury Lane Oakbrook.
Yeah.
If you guys are doing the same shows, and it's valid because you'll draw here with those shows.
It's a different audience. Our audience and Marriott's are completely different.
Right.
We get a little overlap in Oakbrook, but it's tiny.
Yeah.
And might be a few groups that go to both theaters, but you know, we don't get that much.
It's a basically different demographic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of valid as a director producer to use some of the same talent, right? And if they fit what the concept that you're doing, of course.
Yeah, we may very well be able to use some of the same actors, and I don't have a problem. You know, some people might. I've worked with people who say, well I don't want to do it because I don't want to see so-and-so do it. It might influence my performance or something.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And I don't care about any of that. I just care about the show being good and whatever it takes. You know, if it takes you seeing it, fine. If you don't want to see it, that's fine too, you know.
Well, because it's still going to, they're going to do it the way you want them to do it.
Yeah, and it depends on the individual mm-hmm. actor. You know, some have, I remember I worked with Mike Nussbaum and he didn't want to hear Gielgud do some speech that he had to do in a show one time, you know. Well, that was his choice. Somebody else could hear Gielgud and they'd say, oh, that's great. It gives me an idea, you know. Mm-hmm. So it depends, you know. Everybody's different.
Yeah.
But then our last show is It's a Wonderful Life, the musical version.
Okay.
That we did at Candlelight a number of years ago, and Sheldon Harnick came in for that one. And that, again, we made some changes that he liked, and so...
Yeah, that show could use... I'd be interested in what you do with it, because that show could use a few changes.
Yeah, it needed some fix-ups, and I thought we did pretty well with it, and Sheldon liked it a lot, but we'll probably do something a little bit different again here with it.
Are you trying... Are you looking for that show that becomes the Christmas tradition?
Well...
Or do you want to vary? What's your view on that? Like the Goodmans run Christmas Carol
feeling,
forever.
Yeah. Here at the theater, before I came, they had a tradition of doing a Christmas show at the Christmas time every year. So that's not necessarily my theory. My theory is you do a good show, whatever it is, and you have a joyous show and a celebratory show, you know, because you're going to run out of shows that have only a Christmas theme. But right now, we're doing Scrooge this year. We're doing Wonderful Life the following year. And we haven't run out yet. We did Christmas Story a year ago.
Yeah, that was excellent, by the way. I enjoyed
it. Thanks.
I had never seen that before.
Oh, yeah. Isn't it fun?
Yeah, it was fun.
And there are a number of Christmas shows that we can do. We'll probably do Christmas Schooner, John Rieger's show at some point.
Somebody needs to do that. And it would work. People would love it here.
Yeah, I think
it's a strong show.
That here as well. So we probably won't be looking for running out of Christmas shows for a few years yet.
But I agree that's valid because certainly as a reviewer, like I've limited myself to not more than three Christmas carols. I just can't see five and six.
Yeah.
But and people who have a theater goers love a refreshingly new show.
Yeah. And I've never seen this version of Scrooge staged. I've read it and listened to the music, but I haven't seen it. So I'm going to just take it and do it the way we can do it here. You know, and some of the maybe magic tricks they did in the Broadway stage or whatever, we won't be able to do here in the round, but we'll compensate with something else, you know. So we're going to be true to the original Dickens book more than anything, because the book is fabulous. If you read the little novella about Christmas Carol, it's a great little 70-page novella.
Okay, I'll have to grab
the whole
that.
Thing.
Okay,
yeah. And it's fabulous. I went back and read it again, and I think it's great. And I was almost doing Christmas Carol, a play version I'm trying to remember the author now. He's well-known. I just can't think of his name. But and then that got canceled. That was going to be the theater on the other side of town, and somehow that theater didn't work out, but so I never got to do Christmas Carol. So I'm looking forward to it in the musical version. You know,
yeah, the musical version is kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's got some good songs.
Yeah,
it's typical Brickus and Anthony Newley show. It's got some of the same themes as the songs in Stop the World.
By the way, you got to do that one of these years. That could use an update.
Stop the World.
Yeah, that's
good.
Yeah,
I did Roar the Grease Paint at Candlelight.
Yes,
right after
I remember seeing
New
that.
York,
yeah,
and it was so much fun. You remember? And back then, Glennis Ice wrote a review the next day and said there are no memorable songs in the show, and about eight of them went on to be classics afterwards. So
she had a sour puss for a few things. Yeah,
so you got to. That's why you got her about that one.
Good. So you've had a fabulous career, and obviously the spark is still there.
Oh, I love it. I don't know what I'd do if I wasn't doing shows. I mean, you know, that's...
Tell us some of the other shows you've done, like Over the Tavern and some...
Oh, yeah. Well, my favorite play of all the works I've done, and I started doing comedies mostly because in the theater with dinner setting, heavy plays weren't exactly the right approach. People wanted to be entertained primarily.
Yeah, it's a different night out. Yeah.
Yeah. So I started to do mostly comedies. And I love comedy and farce. And, of course, there's nothing better than a good cry, too, if you've got a show that's a tearjerker.
Phantom. Phantom's that way, yeah.
Yeah, melodramatic. And La Mancha. I won many Jeff Awards with La Mancha. But my favorite play is called The National Health. And it's got a subtitle, The National Health or Nurse Norton's Affair, you know. It's a wonderful play by Peter Nichols, the British playwright. And I wandered into the National Theatre of Great Britain at a preview and didn't know what this was. And I just fell in love with that piece. I thought, this is really fabulous. I have to do it in Chicago. So at that time, we were building the Forum Theater next to the Candlelight, and the Forum was not a dinner theater. It was a 425-seat proscenium theater where we wanted to do a little deeper type of show. And so National Health was our second show scheduled there. It ran about 18 weeks, and it got reviews like I wrote them myself. You know, there were four Chicago papers in those days. And all four raved about the show. And
you can't ask for more than that. Huh?
No, and that's the reason that it filled up and we were able to run it 18 weeks was because people didn't know it, of course. It was a American premiere and had never been done anywhere else but at the National. And it was 26 people in the cast.
Wow.
We had an equity company.
I was just
going to
ask why it hasn't been done. You just answered it.
Yeah, it's a big, big show. And we had so many of the good character men. It's a great play for older men, as well as every type besides. But it had Bill Munchau and Bill Murray and Maury Copeland and, Ron Bishop, who was a member of the Goodman Company at the time.
Sure, I remember some of those guys, sure.
Mike Nussbaum, Jim O'Reilly. I mean, they were all in this show. And then a young kid out of college played one of the leading roles of the orderly, who talks to the audience and is a very funny character, and that was Frank Galati in his first Equity.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Very good.
And then we had a lot of good women in it as well. And, it's a wonderful play. To this day, if I pick it up and I start to read a couple pages, I have to read the whole thing. I can't put it down, you know.
So when are you going to do it again?
I need to do it somewhere. I contacted Steppenwolf. I contacted Bob Falls at the Goodman. I said, you know, this show, we got to do this show, you know. And, of course, nobody's picked up on it, but somebody should. And it needs to be done in a place that has some money to spend on it. It can't be a
so it's got to be Steppenwolf or Goodman or maybe Chicago Shakespeare.
Yeah, somebody like that, you know, because it's a big show. There's all this hospital equipment you have to have on stage. And
you wouldn't mind directing it, right?
Oh, I love it. I know exactly how to do it. It's very hard. Mm-hmm. It's about these seven different main characters come from all different parts of England, and they all have different accents besides.
Well, we've got the classical actors who can do comedy. When they did Flea in Your Ear at Shakespeare, it just showed me that and these were all classical actors, and they were funny as could be.
Oh, yeah, they can do it. And it's a very... it's not just a comedy. It's a very strong, dramatic show because it's about the lives of these patients in the hospital. And then there's comedy in the hospital and drama in the hospital. The Maury Copeland part, he's dying of cancer and he's very bitter. And Nichols wrote these fabulous speeches for him, just saying, you know, give us the gas chambers and we'll do the rest, you know, let the old go. I mean, really strong stuff. But mixed in with this comedy of the other characters. And then they watch this television soap opera about what's happening in the hospital story, and that's where Nurse Norton comes in.
Okay, well, you know, a lot of people listen to these podcasts. I hope some of you producers out there, hint, hint, Bill's ready. I'm interested. I got to get a hold of a copy of that script
and
read it.
It is fabulous. Yeah. I'll give you a copy.
Okay,
of it.
Yeah. I definitely would like to read it. So now, with all these awards and all these great shows, I've got to ask you the absolute unfair question. Not what your favorite show is, because that's too unfair. But name some of the ones you're really the proudest of.
Oh, of the ones that we've done. Well, of course, that rates up high, National Health, because it won all the Jeff Awards, too. But then, I love Follies. And that was one of my favorites. And
the only time I've seen Follies was your production.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Did you remember which date? Because we did it in the 80s. We did it in the... Like 81 and 91, 10 years apart.
I believe it was 91.
Yeah, that was the second time we did it. I think probably there were some really interesting things in both productions, but I think the second time we probably did the best version because we certainly did stagecraft-wise. The set was much more interesting. We were using elevators, moving things around, and it was very interesting. But it's mainly about the people, of course. And casting it took me about a year because you have to find old-time performers who can still really sell it, put it over.
And dance a little bit.
Yeah, you have a dancing couple. Sure. That they have to be terrific. We found a couple from Milwaukee who had a dance school who had both been on Broadway for years, and they were wonderful the second time we did it. And then I did it out in San Diego later, and the couple out there that ran that theater were old-time dancers, and they played the dance couple, you know. But so I've done it three times, and that's really a wonderful.
So that's one. Name a few more.
Nine was wonderful.
Okay,
that's one of my other favorite musicals. We had a great production of Showboat, and I love Showboat.
I do too.
It's just such a big project. I love to do it here. Maybe we can someday. But
yeah.
it's
you could do
a
it
big
here.
Cast. You know, it has to have a big cast of probably in the low 30s in numbers because you need a black chorus and a white chorus as well as all the principals. I remember seeing it out long time ago. I saw it out in Connecticut, and they couldn't afford the black chorus, so they had just Joe and Queenie. They sang all the chorus stuff by themselves, too, and I thought, well, that doesn't work, you know.
No.
So you have to have 8 or 10.
Yeah, and there's no depth to it. Yeah.
So it's a big show. And when we did it at Candlelight, Dale Benson played Captain Andy, and he was wonderful in it, you know. And then we did, there's all kinds of them. You know, interesting one was Robert and Elizabeth, which has never been done except our production. We did the American
premiere. Don't
know that
show.
Well, listen, this is a story. Okay. Robert and Elizabeth, I saw it in London in 1966. And it's a musical version of the Barretts and Wimpole Street.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, it sounds a little bit off-putting, but it really is very theatrical, and the music is wonderful. So I always wanted to do it. Well, it had gotten a big fight because the writers, David Merrick was bringing it over to Broadway, and then the writer sued David Merrick, and David Merrick countersued the writer. They got in some kind of a battle. So 9 years it was tied up in law courts, and nobody could do it. I happened to be in London, and I thought, well, just for the heck of it, whatever happened to Robert and Elizabeth? So I call Samuel French, one of the big companies that handles everything of the plays and musicals, and I said, Robert and Elizabeth, is that available by any chance? They said, hold on, sir, just a minute. Put me on hold. They come back. Yes, you can do it. You can pick up the score and all the music parts and everything this afternoon. I almost fell off the chair.
So you had to race down there and go get it. Yeah.
That was
a coup.
I had the American premiere just because I asked at the right time, you know. And it's a big show. And we brought in people from New York. Steve Arlen, who had just done a big Broadway lead, came in to play Robert. And Elizabeth was an opera singer gal that we brought in. And the rest were all from Chicago. And Iris Lieberman won a Jeff Award for a supporting role in it.
I got to ask Iris about this. She's one of my favorite people. Okay, at the Forum.
And it was a big show for the Forum.
Okay, let me just say this in the interest of timer because we're running through I know we could go on for hours.
Want me to quote the dates again?
I'll tell you,
them all wrong the last time.
They can go to the website and get it.
Yeah, okay.
But, you know, we're going to do a special podcast coming up about Candlelight and all the shows you did with a lot of the people that were in it. Because almost everyone who's got their start in theater, whether they are vice presidents of Broadway in Chicago to top PR people to the top talent got their started in Chicago.
It's really interesting all the people we had.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're all great, too.
And my two favorite shows, and let's see your reaction, that you did actually three. Phantom.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Lee Pelty in Fiddler.
Fiddler, he was wonderful. Yeah.
And him in Man of La Mancha.
Yeah, those are great. And, you know, another performance that was wonderful, and it's going to be repeated here, is Jim Harms in La Cage. He is he's better than George Hearn was on Broadway. He's the best La Cage Alban you'll ever
see. I've seen Jim do a lot of stuff. He would be good in
he's
that.
He's won, you know what, he did it for us, and he won a Jeff Award. A couple years later, we brought it back, and he won another Jeff Award for the same role.
You think he could win it the third time?
I think so.
That would be an interesting record.
Yeah.
And by the way, I could be stand corrected, but I believe with your 18 Jeff Awards, I don't believe there's another person that has won that many.
I don't know.
And certainly, I mean, I see people are in awe if they win one, two, or three.
Yeah, it's great to win. And it's harder to win these days because there's so many more in competition, so many more theaters and good talent around. You know, when we started, there were no chorus people. Singers had to be your dancers. You didn't have dancers.
Yeah, that's right. My last question to you, what is your plan? Where do you see yourself doing 5, 10 years from now? I ask that to everybody. It's my standard question.
I don't know. I wish I could do a Broadway show. I've never done one.
Okay.
Something in New York. I did co-produce Trying when we brought Trying
yes.
into New York.
It was awesome. Yes, it was a tremendous show. Yeah.
But I still look forward to directing something in New York someday, and maybe it'll happen. Who knows?
Great. Well, thank you. Thank you. And, folks, come see Dolly. The ride out to Munster is not bad. You'll enjoy it. And it's top-drawer theater. And, Bill, thank you very much.
Oh,
and, folks, remember, go see a play this week.
Hello, Chicago. Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of October 1st, 2007. Altar Boys, the award-winning musical comedy, will be returning to Chicago in an all-new production at the Drury Lane Water Tower Place for a limited engagement. Altar Boys, armed with catchy melodies and divinely coiffed hair, is a hilarious musical comedy about five small-town boys trying to save the world one screaming fan at a time. The show is presented as a concert in real time and satirizes the boy band phenomenon. Playing the boys are Brian Crum, Devin DeSantis, Nick Verena, Tyler McGee, and Adam Zelasko. The show is being produced by Chicago native Joe McGinnis, who recently won a 2007 Tony Award for Best Musical. Bart Kahn and Carl Mollenberg are also producing. For more information on how you can get tickets, which are currently on sale, call 312-642-2000. Again, that's 312-642-2000. Or just click over to the Talk Theater in Chicago's Now Playing section. Drury Lane Oakbrook Terrace Theater has announced its 2008 season. That's right, the theater known for its timeless Chicago classics will open its 2008 season on March 16th with the charming musical comedy Sweet Charity. Opening up in May following Sweet Charity will be Buddy, the Buddy Holly story. Next will be David Bell's new take on the 1937 comedy The Boys from Syracuse. The Tony Award-winning musical MAME opens next on October 16th, then closing out the season will be the international sensation Miss Saigon. The current season continues on with Meet Me in St. Louis, directed by Jim Cordy. The show opens up this October 25th and will be running through December 16th of this year. Then coming in right after the holiday season will be Gary Griffin's much-anticipated The Goodbye Girl. That show opens on January 3rd of 2008 and officially opens up Drury Lane Oakbrook's 2008 year. For more information on the current shows and next season's lineup, click on over to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. The Chicago Tribune is reporting that About Face Theater's artistic director, Eric Rosen, may be considering taking a job with the Kansas City Repertory Theater. Eric has directed several shows with the regional theater and appears to be in final negotiations. Nothing has been set in stone yet, however, but hopefully he stays around here in Chicago because we would really hate to lose him. Talk Theater in Chicago would like to congratulate Hubbard Street Dance Theater for opening up their 30th anniversary season this past Wednesday. Chicago's most famous dance company opened with a revival of Daniel Ezrelo's SFLB at the Harris Theater for Music and Dance. This opening show of the 30th anniversary season will be currently running through October 7th. For more information on how you can get tickets, call 312-334-7777. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. We have come to the end of the news, but before we let you go, it's time for your Shakespeare Quote of the Week. The following quote comes from The Tempest, Act 5, Scene 1. How camest thou in this pickle? Well, thank you again for listening to the podcast. Remember, we are here every Monday with more news just waiting for you to download. So, until next week, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you to keep talking theater. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to send out a big thanks to Bill Palinci for giving us the honor of interviewing him this week. I would also like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And, of course, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we are here every Monday with more interviews and more news ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next week, Chicago, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you to keep talking theater.